Hello, my name is Sam. This is a series best listened to from the beginning, but if you have and you are still here, our last episode found our boy had meandered too far and the chief had to go find him. Luckily he does, and on the way home tells the boy many, many tales of the people's history as well as the formation of the land. Our grad student, however, finds out that reality has thrown a cold cup of coffee onto her face. Please enjoy The Scribbling Man.
I don't really follow your same kind of time scheme, so I'll see you when I see you. He cackled down the sidewalk at his own favorite joke. I promised myself I would finish the section of my paper working on before I tore into his new story. But I break promises to myself with some regularity.
The boy had started to become a man. He'd tasted his first spirits, danced in the bushes with the girls, and now had his own final rite to perform before he could be accepted as one of the men. A duty he was uniquely qualified for, as said by the chief himself, who, over the years, since the great battle, gave the young man special lessons on the history of the land and his people, the gods, how to track, and how to listen to the land. It had been a late night, and the young man was in his favorite treetop perch when he screamed and almost fell for the first time in his life. Somehow the chief had snuck up on the young man, scaling the tree more silently than a snake. The sound of the youth's voice cracking through the night like a great bird of prey was a singular point of embarrassment then and for the rest of his life. The chief chuckled and said, "That's for the canyon." They didn't stop laughing together for a good while, but finally relaxed into the branches of the tree like they were arms for cuddling and had an important chat. "You know the land quite well for vast distances around our village, and better yet, you know the ways back."
"Yes."
"You have a strong mind for games and puzzles and definitely have the good heart to know right from wrong."
"Well..."
"And you're the only person who can stand to talk to the shaman outside of his healing rituals or demanding potions from him."
"He's just a hard nut to crack. He means no harm."
"That is why you need to be the one to do this."
"Do what?"
"Accompany him on his next quest." The young man became the boy again for a moment and was terrified at the prospect.
"What about the predators at night? How will we stay safe?"
"Are you not one of the best shots in the village?" His confidence slightly restored, he asked,
"What is his quest?"
"He needs to find plants and things for his medicines and potions."
"How long will we be gone?"
"I don't really know." The young man had to really think about this. Many years ago, the shaman left with a young female apprentice, and while he came back with many useful things, she quickly became overtaken by demons and had to be exiled forcibly from the tribe for a time. When she came back many weeks later, she looked as different as one could. Her former round and curvy body was hollow and emaciated. Her dark, luscious hair was gray, and she mostly just looked out at the plains from the shade of her hut, humming the same tune to herself day in and day out, until she simply did not wake up one morning. This gave him pause.
"Chief, do you remember the girl who accompanied the shaman last?"
The chief sighed through his teeth. "Yes."
"What happened to her?"
"Taking the quest with the shaman is no light task. She was unfit and unprepared for it. Keeping up with the demands for his potions and medicine is not easy. You, however, are far more clever and cautious than that poor girl was. She was absolutely sure she was ready for the task, and no amount of dissuading her would convince her otherwise." The chief pauses for a moment, considering something.
"Ask him where he wants to go and what he needs, and then do the best you can to take him there and back safely. What should I bring? A shield each, many spears, your addle-addle, water skins, and extra rolled hide and charcoal to make markings of your travels and future wanderings. The young man's ears really pricked up at this last statement. The chief had seen some of his renderings on rocks around the village, and hides he made especially for the chief. It had come in handy once when there was a particularly long dry season, and the closest water source was muck at best, and hardened soil at worst. The young man's drawings had led them to a nice stream that became much more when the dry season was over. That was the second time the young man was given the seat of honor at a festival, and the first night he experienced the first two rites for manhood. A blanket and your signaling feathers. The feathers were still proudly displayed over the doorway of his hut. He would need to find another charm for his mother before he left. When would we leave? Now, the chief said, pointing to a pile of exactly the travel supplies the chief previously mentioned. But what about mother? I need to get a charm for her door, or demons could get in. It's maybe best if she doesn't know until after you are long gone. And also, now's the best time to use the stars to direct you. I suggest you use it. But I'll see that your mother's hut is well protected while you're gone. I see. I don't think she appreciates the magnitude of Shaman's quest, nor your ability to easily guide him through it. She may prevent you from going, but can't stop you if you've already left, the chief reasoned conspiratorially. Do you really think I can do this? Of course I do. You are the only one who can. You understand the subtleties of the land and how to deal with situations you are unfamiliar with. You will see plenty of those. The only difference between this and your natural tendency to wander will be tending to the shaman during his visions. You will bring back great wisdom from this. I have dreamt it. The young man contemplated this and finally agreed. They climbed down the tree, and he got his gear ready for travel while the chief called on the shaman. They were walking out of the village together quicker than the young man would have believed. The shaman blurted out directions to follow the northmost star across the sky. The young man did so with the shaman in tow, occasionally stopping to let him catch up while he meandered. The shaman's head flung back, staring at the stars, mouth full of words in a bizarre tongue. It went like this until morning, when the shaman seemed to have a moment of focus, emptied a water skin, not spilling a drop, and fell asleep curled up beneath a bush as the sun completely cleared the horizon. The young man spent much of the day surveying the land around them to hunt for their next meal and refill the water skins as much as possible. When he finally stumbled back to the shaman, he was replete with fresh water, two prairie chucks, some nuts, berries, mushrooms, and roots. He quickly made a pile of his gatherings and covered it with his blanket and fell asleep. When he woke, it was dark and the pile was gone. He was tangled in his blanket and had a panicky time getting unwrapped in his confusion. Settle. Settle, young man. All is well. A wizened voice crackled above the flames. As the rest of his senses kicked in, the young man could indeed hear fire burning, see the flicker of light on the shaman's grinning old face, and smell the savory prairie chuck being roasted. His stomach roared like the great lion, and he sat up. Here, drink this. The shaman handed him a wooden cup with steaming liquid in it. He sipped at it, and it had a sweet beginning, then a very bitter, earthy aftertaste. Then again, a sweet aftertaste. He finished it in a few drafts and stared at the chunks at the bottom. Ooh, eat the chunks. That's where the flavor comes from. The young man did so. It was some of the berries he picked, a leaf the shaman brought, and a third pulpy ingredient he couldn't place. Tasty, said the young man.
It is.
Is the chuck ready yet?
Not just yet.
The young man then burped a belch that rang like a drum into the night. He said to himself before he shot up, ran a few steps, and vomited.
Ah, yes, now you're ready for dinner.
While gorging on the prairie chucks, fingers and face greasy, something struck the young man as so hilarious that he had to stop eating and giggle. This stretched the meal longer than it may have been otherwise, which was most agreeable to the young man's stomach, as it had quite enough to deal with after the shaman's tea. As the giggles subsided and he was able to finish his chuck and roots, their campsite began being visited by curious night creatures. Fairies were dancing in the firelight. Small lightning children ran and danced around the perimeter of their campsite, and great gods' faces appeared in the stars and imparted grand knowledge upon them and sang them epic songs. The young man came to understand the many layers of existence and how they are all part of the great oneness that is tended to by people and displayed in the good acts they do for one another. A pattern of the universe was shown to him that night, one he can never explain, but will never forget. The line between waking and dreaming became skewed, and for a time the young man was traveling in the world of dreams, observing the resting places of the gods and the stories from the storytellers, smelling music and hearing the dawn, tasting victory and feeling love like a tangible embrace. The music became the shaman's chanting voice. The smell was the burning coals from the fire. Dawn's light was in his eyes, and the love and warmth embracing him was his blanket. He realized he was back in the waking world. It was morning, and he heard nature calling very loudly. He wandered off some distance and emptied his bladder, and what turned out to be angry and jilted bowels. He quickly bathed in a small creek and found a fruit tree to peruse for morning meal prospects. Many days were like this. The shaman prepared various leaves, roots, and fungi for the young man's nightly lessons. Everywhere they went, the shaman was gathering flowers, berries that were known poison, lizards they would kill to dry the skin, feathers from birds, live toads, and tiny bright frogs that sent the young man terrible dreams. Coiled vines, bark, abandoned insect carapaces, and a gourd that they sealed as best they could to keep in the hundreds of ants with huge pincers that would grab and hold a wound closed. This latest was a most amazing story, so the shaman claimed. Many chiefs ago, there was a duel between our tribe and our neighbors. Our chief agreed to fight if he picked the location. This was the spot. The young man looked around and observed the sparse, healthy trees and teeming underbrush. There were also large mounds that seemed to have moving skin. Once closer, the young man saw that it was an uncountable number of ants each mound housed that created the effect. He was horrified when the shaman walked up to one and banged on it with his stick until several lines of the large-mouthed ants came out. The shaman expertly diverted the streaming ants into the gourd and sealed it with pitch and leather. Our tribe's chief was getting beaten very badly, many small cuts and wounds from his opponent's vicious weapon, and was finally knocked down and left for dead. Well, the forest spirits were displeased with this outcome because the victor was a silly and evil child trapped in a large, angry man's body. He meant harm to everyone and everything he met, so the spirits sent the fighter ants to seal our chief's wounds. That night, while the man was having a very abusive celebration of his triumph, the chief walked into the light of the bonfire, slowly creeping up in full view of everyone but the brute. Their silence and staring finally cut through the enormous brutish forehead, and when he turned to look at what mystery was behind him, he dropped dead of fright right then and there. The chief's wives and the shaman rushed to his side and noticed his wounds were bound by lines of these ants, and they stayed until the wounds were completely healed.
We have used them in this way ever since.
2 days later, as their bags were nearly full of their bounty and they were trying to outpace the evil monkey creature that had been pursuing them and causing mayhem ever since they ate the unfamiliar berries they found in a rocky and barren landscape. The cuts and scrapes they had from the berry bramble were merely annoying and slightly stinging, but so far only superficial. The ease of their path over the newly discovered rocks was welcome. They were walking for a short time when both the shaman and young man shouted in wonder. Ahead of them, a shiny reflective liquid was filling into a little pool among the rocks and cracks. It was a sight they had a hard time reconciling while awake, since it was something so clearly from the dream world. Shakily, the shaman put down his load and giggled and mumbled while he slowly approached the rising, shimmering pool. The young man looked around suspiciously, trying to spy the monkey approaching while he set down his own load. When he turned back around, the shaman was sitting at the edge of the weird pool and poking at it with his hands. It behaved much like water. He cupped some in his hands and threw it at the young man. It bounced off his chest harmlessly with little cold slaps. The individual beads gathered at his feet and rolled down the slope to rejoin the growing mass of silvery stuff. The shaman giggled again and cupped more. The young man flinched in preparation of another dousing, but was absolutely stunned when the small pool in the shaman's hands completely disappeared.
Written, edited, and produced by Sam Lett. Narrated by Sky Wagoner.